Let's do it. Welcome back, everybody. So good to be with you and grateful for an opportunity to just talk about some of the realities of emotional health, mental health. And we've been on this journey talking through really the impact of depression is the overall kind of theme. The first time in this webinar series, Rick Feria, one of the chaplains with the Fearless Family of Churches and the Fearless Chaplaincy, he talked about anger and how anger essentially turned inward is the definition of depression. If we are not healthily processing through our anger, we are going to move into a stage where we start to feel the symptoms and the signs of what is commonly known as clinical depression. And then the last time, if you had a chance to listen in with us, we talked about the different types of depression. There are three types of depression. Now, there's actually more than that, and they have some different clinical terms. But for the purpose of our webinar, we had seasonal depression, situational depression, and sustained depression. And so if you are, in fact, watching this webinar series after the live viewing on Zoom, you can pause at any time. You can go back and you can watch those webinars, although this one's going to be a standalone of its own. Here's what we're all kind of building up to, that you have anger turned inward, and unexpressed anger can turn into depression. Depression over a long period of time or intense seasons of depression can lead us into a place where we start having dark thoughts. And by dark thoughts, we mean thoughts about dying or not wanting to live anymore or falling into a space where we think the world would be better off if we were just not in it. And if you've ever been in that situation, which I think a few of us maybe listening have, or we know somebody that has, I certainly have had moments of depression, especially when I was younger, when I was in high school, I struggled with depression. I actually had some thoughts that were dark and that were a little scary. If you've ever been in that situation or you know someone in your life who's been in that situation, it can be really scary. So what we're going to do is we're going to unpack this concept and this reality of what depression can lead to, which would be ultimately suicide. Just to classify here, there are different ways of looking at this. There are certain organizations that take different ways of approaching the topic of suicide. I'm going to mention a couple of things. One, some people do not prefer the term commit suicide. They prefer actually to say die by suicide. One of the reasons is because suicide is a byproduct of a struggle with depression. Though it is a permanent action, there's actually an organization based out of Grand Rapids that it's called I Understand Love Heals. I prefer the definition that they use when they talk about suicide is that someone doesn't die by suicide, they die by depression, or they die from depression. Because suicide is a solution to a serious mental disruption or emotional disruption or pain that is not necessarily visible to the human eye. And it really is the byproduct of an internal struggle. And what I want to do as we walk through here is I want to give a brief explanation of what suicide is, what this battle with depression is. We're going to talk through the understanding of it. We're going to talk through the warning signs. We're going to talk through some of the things that you can do about it. And as we begin here, I just want to just note, I may say something that triggers you. We'll get to this in a minute, but a lot of people are impacted by suicide. On average, about one suicide impacts 212 people. Similar to cancer, many of us, we could walk into a room and say, how many of you have been impacted by cancer, whether it's you directly or someone in your life? And I think a lot of people would raise their hand. We could have the same, how many of you know someone who's depressed? A lot of us would raise our hands. How many of you know of someone who died by suicide? A lot of us would raise our hands. It has a really big impact. So if I say something that triggers you, if I say something that causes pain or frustration or hurt, I just want to tell you at the beginning, I don't mean to, and it is not my desire in any way to trigger a trauma or a pain in you. And if this gets too much for you, it's too hard for you to listen to, You have my permission to just turn the audio off, close your laptop. This is recorded, and so you can always listen to it at another time. But and let me just walk through kind of the impact of suicide. So suicide, or a death by depression, is the leading cause of death among people age 15 to 29. That's worldwide. Let that sink in for a second. It is right now in our country, not even globally, but just in our country, there are more deaths by despair comparatively than there are deaths by car accident. So more people in the United States, especially age 15 to 29, are dying by despair, or dying by depression, than they are dying by car accidents. It used to be the most dangerous thing you could do every single day was drive to work. Statistically speaking, that is not true anymore. Right now, the most dangerous thing you can do is not pay attention to your mental health. That's what the research is showing. More than 700 people die by suicide each year globally, or 700,000 people, that is. Suicide rates have increased in many countries over the past few decades, specifically in the last few years. In the United States, it is the 11th leading cause of death. Over 45,000 suicides occur annually, with many more attempts. We'll get to this a little bit more and talk about the differences between men and women. Though men are more likely to die by suicide, women are actually more likely to attempt suicide. Part of the reason for that is men choose more drastic and violent measures, usually by something physical that will attack their body. Usually it's gunfire. Women are more likely to choose chemical solutions or things like that. And so they attempt, they're more likely to attempt, but less likely to actually die. Okay. Suicide affects all demographics. However, there are higher rates, which we said among men. There are also higher rates among LGBTQ plus individuals or individuals from that community. Veterans are especially at risk. I know I don't have to tell you this because Operation Injured Soldier has talked about this. It's one of the reasons why we're doing the webinars. But there are over 20 deaths a day to suicide in the veteran community. And that is actually what is reported. It is likely higher than that. Pretty much anything to an overdose or a death by addiction is classified as a suicide. And so there's a lot of factors that go into that. And there are specific ethnic groups as well that are a little higher at risk. And here's what we want to define as suicide or as a death by depression. It is an intentional act of taking one's life, often linked to intense emotional or psychological pain. Mental health conditions like anxiety and depression and substance abuse disorders often contribute to suicidal ideation, or what is known as suicidal thoughts. Psychologically speaking, it comes from a place of mental or emotional distress or pain. And people who struggle with thoughts of suicide often feel hopeless, isolated, and unable to see a way through their pain. They don't see a way out. And suicide is not about wanting to die. It's about wanting the pain to end. I have known individuals over the years, I've had friends over the years who have died by depression, and they were a hoot to be around, and they were lovely human beings, and they had an internal struggle that nobody knew really anything about, and you never would have known, really, you never would have known how great the pain was, but on the inside, they got to a point where they just couldn't deal with it anymore, And that's really what people struggle to understand. It's not that people want to die. It's just they don't know how to live anymore. And that's really hard. It's a really tough spot to be. There are some mental health conditions that contribute to suicide. One would be a depression, as we talked about. Another would be bipolar disorder. Another would be schizophrenia. Anxiety would be another that contributes to that. Although, as we've previously mentioned, anxiety and depression are really two sides of the same coin, if you've been listening to our webinars. And those are usually the common factors that are linked to it. I want to reiterate, substance abuse or the misuse of alcohol or drugs can heighten these risks. They can also lead to an overdose, which again is classified as a death by depression or a death by despair, because typically alcohol consumption and recreational pharmaceuticals, which would be drugs or things like that, those usually are taken to numb out from the internal pain that we feel. And so they usually link all of that together. Life events and stress are huge contributing factors. So traumatic events like the loss of a loved one. For those of you who have seen combat, losing brothers or sisters in combat is a significant stressor. Divorce is a significant stressor. Like financial stress where you don't see a way out, unemployment, all of those can increase vulnerability. Experiences of abuse or bullying or discrimination or violence, those are all risk factors. This is incredibly true of individuals in the younger demographic. So 18 to 25, those 15 to 21, 15 to 25, that whole group, abuse and bullying are primary factors in child suicide. I was talking with a HR professional in the Grand Rapids area about a month ago. And in the West Mission community, we've had in a small group, they've had three suicides of 13-year-old girls in the course of a three-month period. So that's one a month. And all of them are part of a small community of like hockey league, and they've tracked it all of it to digital bullying, everything through social media, a lot of bullying, a lot of targeting, and that bullying led to these 13-year-old girls who had an insufficiency of coping mechanisms, which we've talked about in previous webinars. They got to a place where they couldn't deal with the internal pressure and the internal pain that they felt from the bullying, and so it was just easier in many ways to try to relieve that pain. And it's really sad, but that's a reality. Let me pause there, because this is a lot of information. This is a webinar. Let me remind you, if you're listening to something and you've been triggered by something I said, or this is hard for you to hear, I give you permission to pause, turn your screen off, walk away, take a deep breath, get some water, walk outside. It's going to be okay. But I will pause periodically just to say, hey, this can be really intense. And I'm, of course, adding in some stories for context of reality and elements that I have seen in my career and in my work. So we talked about a little bit of life stress, abuse, bullying. Here's a couple other contributing factors. History of previous suicide attempts where people they've attempted. That's a factor. Family history of suicide or mental illness, chronic illness or pain, and isolation. This is a big one. We talked about this with anger. We talked about this with depression. We're talking about it with suicide. Isolation is not good for your mental health. If you get nothing out of these webinars, you need people. You need people around you who will support you, care for you, love you, walk with you through those challenging seasons of life. That is the very reason why Operation Injured Soldiers exists. This organization cares about you. They care about you as a person. You matter to them. You matter to the world. You matter to your families. You matter to me. You matter to God. You matter. And you need people around you. Although I do want to talk just briefly about family history. This is a reality. A pastor friend of mine, he knows a family that has lost all three sons to depression. One right after another, kind of years after. And there are genetic realities. There are family history realities. If there is any history of suicide or depression in your family, that is something you want to pay attention to. That's something you want to talk about. because those are elements that contribute to suicide and to these long-lasting seasons of depression. I want to talk a little bit about warning signs. Now, I'm going to give you just a heads up here. Warning signs are common signs, but they are not common to every individual. So I'm going to walk through a list of warning signs that you can anticipate. I'm going to walk through a list of warning signs that maybe will be present. But I will tell you this, not every person has all of the warning signs all at the same time. And most of the time, even though I'm going to go through a whole list of warning signs, most of the time, if you know someone who dies by suicide, the common story is nobody saw the signs. We didn't see it. Nobody knew. And so I can give you all of these signs and I can walk through them with you. And yes, they are signs. Yes, people do see them. But it's no guarantee that you're going to see them all. And I want to be honest, as I mentioned, not only am I a trained professional, I've had friends that have died by suicide and I didn't see all the signs. Because typically people don't show all the signs to the same people. They will spread it around. And that's why, again, that's why community is so important, because we are connected one to another and someone sees one sign and someone sees another and we're connected and we're talking about it. It helps us to take action and prevent, arguably, a preventable reality. No one has to die by suicide. No one has to die by depression. These are things that are preventable, especially if we're in community with each other and aware of what's going on. But here's a couple of warning signs. One, behavioral changes. Someone starts to withdraw from gatherings or activities or relationships. Changes in sleep patterns and appetite. Loss of interest in hobbies or work or school. And if you are paying attention from our previous webinar, these are all signs of depression as well, which again is why you might not see all of these present leading up to a significant act like suicide. Verbal indicators, a statement like, I'm a burden to others. The world would be better off without me. I can't live like this anymore. As a pediatric therapist, I worked with young men, age 8 to 28, essentially. And one of the scariest things, and if you're a parent, you're going to get this right away, one of the scariest things is to hear your child say, I don't know if I can live like this anymore. And I got that a lot. And I got a lot of parents coming in and sitting on the couch in front of me in absolute horror and fear, worrying and wondering whether their child was going to be a statistic. And so when you hear something like that, it's good to pay attention to it. It can be really scary, but typically they will say something to someone with something like that. If they've got people to reach out to, talking about feeling trapped or hopeless, like, I just don't know how I can get out of it. I just don't see any hope. I just don't see a future in this, all that kind of stuff. Physical indicators, increased substance abuse, so increased drinking, increased creative pharmaceutical usage, so drugs, opiates, that kind of thing, self-harm behaviors. This might be, you know, something for OIS to talk about. We don't have a ton of time to do a deep dive, but talking about self-harm would be a big one. Maybe that's a webinar down the road for us to pay attention to. But I'll briefly explain what self-harm is. When you feel icky on the inside, you feel anxious, you feel depressed, you feel that pit of despair, you just feel like shit on the inside. Okay. When you feel that way on the inside, sometimes it can bring relief to bring physical pain to the outside. And that's where cutting comes in. That's where bruising comes in. That's where burning comes in. That's where biting comes in. Cutting, biting, bruising, burning, these are all forms of self-harm. You can also do self-harm through exercise. I know some people will go to the gym and they will work out in excess and they will take extensive medications to keep their bodies from feeling too much pain, but they'll push themselves past the limit because they actually want to hurt physically as a way of dealing with the emotional pain on the inside. That's what self-harm is. And again, we could have a long conversation about self-harm. Typically, people do not die from self-harm. Typically, people get relief from self-harm. If an individual dies from self-harm, so we've all probably seen a movie or a television show where someone died from taking a bath and maybe cutting their wrists. Typically, if an individual dies from self-harm, it's an accidental. They didn't intend to die by suicide. They just cut too deep. That's usually the case. Not always, but usually the case. Self-harm is an indication that suicide could become a problem. Typically, when self-harm is a problem, it's not when people are harming themselves. It's when they take away that self-harm coping mechanism without anything stronger to replace it, and then they fall into real trouble. I did see this, not frequently, but I did see this when I was working with teenagers that were cutting or that they were burning. We'd have to give them skills to replace, tools to replace, because it is a very powerful coping mechanism. And again, maybe this is a good conversation for a later webinar, but just to give you some context on self-harm, it is something to pay attention to. It's not necessarily life-threatening, but it can point to something that is life-threatening. Another physical sign or indicator is when people start giving away possessions or making final arrangements. So let's say you're talking to somebody and they're a huge Jimmy Buffett fan, and they've got Margaritaville paraphernalia, and they've got, you know, Jimmy Buffett shirts and signed stuff. And one day they come into work and they're like, "Hey, you know, I think you'd really like this album by Jimmy Buffett," or, "Mary, I'm looking here. Could you give a couple examples of replacement coping mechanisms for self-harm for younger children?" Mary, yes, I can. But why don't we hold that question to the end of the webinar? Thumbs up? Okay. And I'd be happy to walk through some coping mechanisms, because there will be some that we go through here. But someone comes in, they love Jimmy Buffett. They come to you, they know you love Jimmy Buffett, and they give you a signed CD of Jimmy Buffett, of a Jimmy Buffett album, or they give you a signed t-shirt. And that's their favorite thing in the world, and they talk about their prized possession, they give it away. Or they start giving away different pieces from their collection to different people, and they just start saying things like, "Well, it really doesn't mean anything anymore. It's not as important to me anymore. It doesn't matter as much anymore." One thing I will note, there's somebody on here who does not have their mic muted, and if you could, thank you, Mike, mute your mic. That's awesome. Thank you. So they start giving away all of their stuff. That's an indication that there may be something going on. Same thing to making final arrangements. And this is a little bit of a tough one, because as most of us are in our 30s, 40s, and 50s, which individuals in their 40s and 50s are at their highest risk to attempt, and in the category that is most likely in the United States, not necessarily worldwide, but in the U.S. When you're in your 40s and 50s, you start thinking about things like, "Hey, do I have enough life insurance to take care of my family if I were to go? Do we have a will?" All of that kind of stuff. And so it is important, like that's a responsible thing to do. But if someone says to you something like, "Hey, would you be sometime down the road, would you be willing to read something, a eulogy for me, or would you be the executor of my estate?" And they haven't really talked about that before, and it seems really sudden, something to pay attention to. Sudden calmness after a period of depression. So you know somebody who's really struggling. Here's something that most people do not know about suicide. When you are in a high state of depression is not when you are most likely to attempt a death by suicide or a death by depression. The most dangerous time for someone in a depressive episode is not in the thick of their depression. It's when they are coming out of it. And here's the reason why. Because if you're depressed, the one thing you don't want to do is anything. You don't have the motivation. You don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to eat breakfast. You don't want to go to work. You have very little motivation. And this has been true all of the time, but most of the time, the most dangerous time, or the time that people are most susceptible to a suicide attempt, is after the depressive episode has left them and they have a state of calm and they actually start to feel a little bit better. This is the reason why March, April, and May are suicide awareness and mental health awareness months. The time that people are most likely to die by suicide is in the United States in March, April, and May. And that's because the sun starts to come out. We start to feel a little bit better. Not better enough to say we're out of that area, but we've been kind of in that crappy place for a long time. We've been thinking about it, but we don't have the motivation. And as soon as the sun comes out, we start to feel a little bit better. And then we have oodles of motivation to do what it is that we've been planning to do. So again, when you see people coming out of that period of depression, they feel calm. It could indicate that they are in a place where they're like, okay, I've made the decision. I'm ready to do this. And I have the motivation as well. Okay. So again, I'm going to pause there. As I've said before, I have said a lot. Some of this may be very hard for you to hear. Some of you may know someone who attempted suicide or died by suicide in the spring. And you might be thinking something like, did I miss it? Could I have done something? Could I have seen something? Let me just give if I can, a clinical and if it's possible, a pastoral word to you. No, you couldn't have done something. No, you couldn't have stopped it. There is no end to that line of thinking. The truth is, once someone gets to a place where they don't know how they can keep on living anymore, it is very hard to stop them. They will find a way. And you are not responsible for somebody else's decisions. You're just not. And I know that's hard, and I know you got to work through that. And trust me, I have to work through that because I've lost friends. And as I mentioned, I'm a trained professional. No, you couldn't have stopped it. But if I've said something that triggers you, again, I just want to give you permission to pause, put your screen down, walk away, get some air, come back, watch the rest of the webinar later. I want to say a couple of things about just the importance of just having mental health awareness and things that we can do to, reduce the stigma. One of the barriers to preventing suicide is a stigma around mental health. That's why I applaud OIS. I applaud the team here and so thankful to be a part of this because the reality is I come from a generation and the generation before me was, I think, more extreme, where you just didn't talk about your feelings. And I'm also in a demographic of men. We don't talk about our feelings. And it's uncomfortable. And that's not what guys do. And I'll just tell you flat out, that is 100% horseshit. It is. Guys do talk about their feelings. And we need to talk about our feelings. And I don't care which generation you're from. Problems are problems. And they existed 100 years ago. And they're going to exist 100 years from now. And talking about the problems that we have on the inside, that is one of the most important things that we can do. Normalizing conversations. We should be able to talk about our mental health as much as we do our physical health. I mean, as the meeting started and before we kicked this thing off, we were talking about RSV and influenza and all the other stuff that's going around. We should be able to say, you know what? I feel really depressed in the winter months, just as easily as we say, you know what, my family has the bout of influenza and we've got the sickness and we're passing it around from person to person. And that's the truth, because it is an illness. It is a sickness. It's a sickness of the soul. It's a sickness of the heart and the emotions. It's a sickness that not everybody can see. And the more we talk about it, the more likely people are to talk about it. Looking for ways to normalize help-seeking behavior, talking about counselors, talking about resources, talking about podcasts, ways for people to get help, providing education. You can Google signs for suicide. You can Google signs for depression. You can get all kinds of posters. You can get things that you can put on Facebook, promoting therapy, hotlines, support groups like the one OIS is putting together to just get everybody to get on a webinar and say, hey, let's talk about it. These are all ways that we can help to reduce the stigma and we can help save lives. I'm gonna give you a couple strategies to preventing suicide. And again, I want to emphasize this, even though I give you strategy, and even though we talk through this, you are not responsible for somebody else's decisions. And even if the strategies are available, it's the proverbial, you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make them drink. And so just even as I say this, I just want to clarify, they may not be the solution. It's super, super hard. It's super, super complicated. It's very nuanced. But with that, I'll just say, if you know somebody who's struggling, encourage them to see a therapist. Research shows that the people who are most likely to benefit from therapy are the least likely to make the phone call. Even something as simple, if you know somebody who's struggling and you're like, hey, I think you might need to talk to somebody, and they say, okay, that'd be a good idea. Don't just give them a phone number. Sit with them and say, hey, I'll call the number with you. I don't know if any of you have ever been to a therapeutic place. You go to the VA or you go to Pine Rest or some other organization. You know what's really scary if you're making the first phone call? It's scary to answer a bunch of questions from an intake coordinator because you feel like you're being interrogated. And anything that we can do to alleviate barriers of anxiety, we should do that. And so say, hey, you know what? I'll make the phone call with you. I'll sit with you. I'll help you answer the questions. I'll drive you to your first appointment. I'll go with you. I'll wait in the waiting room with you. But to say, like, I'm here with you. You're not alone. Encouraging that is super, super important. You can support the development of mental health services for vulnerable populations. I will say this. This is not meant to make a political statement. It's not. This is not political for me at all. As we mentioned, veterans are a very vulnerable demographic. Children, a very vulnerable demographic. LGBTQ+, men and women of the gay, lesbian, and trans community are at the highest risk for vulnerability. At a minimum, just acknowledging that individuals from marginalized communities are vulnerable is really helpful. And to say, no matter where you stand from a political, theological, philosophical position, at a minimum, just to say these are human beings who are hurting. And to say as a human, one human to another human, I don't want you to hurt, can go a long way. And to say you matter, you matter. And again, if that is a charged statement for you, and we are all, I think, we can all honestly say we come from our own sets of beliefs. I respect you. You respect me. I'm just saying at a foundational level, when people hurt, it is good for people to care. And so being aware of the vulnerable populations, helping to build strong support systems around people who are struggling. We talked about the community environment here at Operation Injured Soldier, but helping people tap into families, loved ones, communities, the workplaces, create those environments at a minimum. And this gets into coping mechanisms a little bit here for Mary, who asked this question, but teaching people to learn how to actively listen and to respond with empathy to someone who's in crisis. That is something that I do. I do trainings on that. I train teams and individuals on how to actively listen, how to be people of empathy. Believe it or not, teaching children how to actively listen and how to show empathy is a huge way of helping them learn to cope with everyday stresses. And so, I don't know, maybe that's another webinar in the future for us, is just, what does it mean to actively listen? What does it mean to listen in a way to respond in empathy to someone who's struggling? Posting things like a crisis helpline or a resource for national suicide prevention in whatever state that you're in. You can have their state level ones as well. there's lots of things that you can do to help prevent it. If you are struggling, if you are one who is struggling, or you know somebody in your home who is struggling, there's a couple of things that you can do as well. Number one is reach out. We've talked about this a little bit. Call somebody. Let somebody know. Ask someone directly if they are thinking about suicide. Ask them if they are thinking about ending their life. And don't just ask them once. Ask them twice or three times. I've had it where I have asked people, are you thinking about hurting yourself? And they say, I can't tell you that. Because they know if they tell me that, then I have to do something about it. So I ask them again, are you thinking about hurting yourself? No. And then I ask them a third time, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Sometimes. Okay, let's talk about that. And just on that note, it's one thing if they say, yes, I am thinking about hurting myself, or yes, I've thought about it. The next question is, do you have a plan? Do you know what you will do? That is the magic phrase. If someone says, yes, and I have a plan, like they say something like, well, I know where the gun is, or yes, I bought the drugs or whatever. And people, sometimes they will say it, because the truth is people don't want to die. They just don't want to live anymore. If they communicate a plan, do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go directly to 911 and make a phone call. I would rather at the end of it say I did too much than say I did not do enough. Okay. So that's the magic thing right there. Now, if there's anything you take away from this webinar, is if someone says, yes, I'm thinking about it, and yes, I have a plan in some way, or it even resembles a plan, do something about it. Call somebody, call 911. Again, I would rather people, I actually have people who have been so angry with the church that they never come back because we called on a well check for them, because we weren't sure if they were okay. And they were so offended that we called the police. And honestly, I sleep fine at night, guys. I really do. And gals. Because I would rather know that we did everything we could. And maybe we went overboard and that was too much for some people. But I'd rather say that than say, I wish I would have done something else. That's a regret I don't want to live with. So do reach out. Do let people know. Do be aware of any plan that there is. Be a non-judgmental listener. And if someone comes to you and they say they're really struggling, be careful not to give solutions too quick. 9 times out of 10, people just need you to listen, and they need you to be kind. Create a space for people who are struggling. A group like OIS, or a small community group, or just a place where people can share. Stay connected. Text messages. You know what one of the best ways to stay connected to somebody is? It's not a text, it's not a phone call, and it's not a face-to-face conversation. Just write them letters every day. Why did we get away from writing letters? One of the things that you can do more often than not is you can write a letter to somebody that you care about, put it in the mail, express it if you have to, and then they have a physical reminder of your love and concern for them that they can keep looking back at. I'm going to get something real, real quick. Just be real careful here. This box is filled with every encouraging note I have received in the course of my ministry career over the last 15 years. I call it my bad day box. Call it my bad day box because when I have a bad day, guess what I do? I open it up. And I read the letters of encouragement, the letters of criticism. Those go in the garbage. I don't keep those. They're not worth it. The letters of encouragement, I keep them. And on a bad day, I open up and I read through them. It means something. It's a big deal. So that's something you can do to encourage. A couple of things, and we're winding down here, but just a couple of things to do if you're in a crisis situation. If someone tells you, because I'm sure you were thinking, well, what if somebody tells me you have a plan? We already mentioned that. Call 911. Listen calmly to them without judgment. Do your best to remove any dangerous objects that are in the near proximity. help them walk through a safety plan. So that would include things like, hey, who are your emergency contacts? Where are some safe places you can go? What are some coping strategies? We'll get to that here in a minute as we round down. And then just understand that most workplaces and most environments have some sort of emergency plan. And so just be aware of that. Here's where we're going to get into. We're going to get into some self-care things and some coping skills that you can do if you are in fact struggling or somebody else is struggling. Number one, self-care is not selfish. It's not. I don't really know a lot of people who are selfish when it comes to self-care. Maybe there's 1 out of 100 that take it to an extreme. But for the most of us living in the U.S., we just don't take self-care seriously. And especially if you grew up in the church, there's this whole thing of like, well, you shouldn't be selfish. You should be selfless and you should take care of others and blah, 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 blah. Here's the deal. It's okay to take care of yourself. It's okay to go out on a walk. It's okay to get a massage. It's okay to put on comfy pants after a long day, which, by the way, is a form of self-care. It's okay to make soup, which, by the way, is a form of self-care. It's okay to go skinny dipping, which, by the way, is a form of self-care. It's okay to do things that are good for you because you deserve it. It's okay to treat yourself. It is okay to go ice fishing. It's okay to go out in the woods and go hunting. It's okay to do those things, and it's okay to take care of yourself. So stressing that self-care is a big deal. Exercise, relaxation, finding healthy social connections, deep breathing, mindfulness, meditation. Those are all great coping skills. And Mary, just as we talk on that, one of the best ways to help a child who is working through cutting or self-harm is something called DBT, dialectical behavior therapy. It's a very specific form of cognitive behavior therapy. It utilizes things like mindfulness and relaxation techniques to build skills and tools. And I think Pam and Kyle, they've got information that can give you access to a mobile app that I developed that has some skills in it, some breathing exercises and some gratitude practices. Anybody who's affiliated with OIS can get free access to that app, and they have a code that we populated in the last webinar. And so, Mary, you can get more information on that from them. A couple of key takeaways here, and then we're going to give some time for question. One, suicide prevention is everybody's responsibility. It affects all of us, and so it is on all of us to do something to help someone in our life. Understanding what leads up to it, the risk factors, some of the warning signs, that can help. Encouraging conversations about mental health, that can help. And at a minimum, making an impact to be kind to somebody else and showing empathy and love and compassion towards people who are struggling, regardless of their season or situation of life, can help. There was a long study that was done years ago where they looked at suicide attempts versus active deaths by suicide. And the number one factor that led to stopping someone from attempting suicide or dying by suicide was that someone in their life that day was kind to them. Just kind. Someone said something nice, was kind to them, said they mattered, said they loved them, gave them a hug, told them, hey, it's going to be okay. I'm praying for you. I'm for you. I'm on your side. Kindness is one of the greatest superpowers that we have, and it's available to all of us. And so I want to leave you kind of with that thought as we move into time for a question, but be kind. The truth is most people are fighting a battle you know nothing about, and kindness costs you nothing and gains you everything in that respect. So that's all we have on this conversation about deaths by depression and suicide. And I'm happy to take some questions or talk a little bit. Kyle, I do think that I addressed Mary's question, but Mary, if you want any more suggestions for coping mechanisms, you just let me know in the chat or whatever. But I did walk through Kyle, some coping skills and some coping mechanisms and some behavioral kind of therapeutic approaches that are evidence-based to help with that. So.
Yeah, I'll definitely reach out to Kyle about that app that you were talking about.
Yep. Cool. And again, DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, super, super powerful. You can Google that. I've probably got three or four books of it here in my office somewhere, and a bunch of different mindfulness strategies that are good for both young boys and young girls. So, any other questions? I don't know if I triggered a bunch of people and they walked away from their screen, which is entirely possible, by the way, which is, I gave you permission, so that's all right. But yeah, happy to answer any questions or talk a little bit more. I know it's a little more serious on this one, so.
I'll just say that I'm appreciative. I had a pretty close friend take her own life with a firearm. And I know you said that's kind of out of the ordinary, right? And it was in the springtime and she was on an upswing. And so just hearing, I felt a lot of guilt afterwards because I kind of let my guard down because of how happy she seemed in that time. So everything that you have talked about has hit home quite hard, like just in understanding. Like I know that I could not have saved. It was not her first attempt, right? And she had just gotten into an argument that day, and it was enough to trigger that kind of a response. And so just having a better understanding of even just the little things, right? I think is helpful for me. So you hit home with a lot of topics. It is a hard topic. But I'm sure it has impacted every single one of us in some way.
Yeah, boy, that's heavy. It's so hard. It's so hard. I mean, honestly, like, so putting on these webinars, talking about some of this stuff, it is a lot easier for me to talk about anxiety and depression, because you can go through that your whole life and not make an extreme decision that impacts everything for a temporary pain. Or what could be a temporary pain. I think there's, for me, this isn't theory, Mary, for you, this isn't theory. This is someone we love. This is someone that we care about, and they're gone, and they didn't have to be. And that's hard. I just want to reiterate, and I know you said it already, it's not your fault. And you could not have stopped it. You couldn't have. And I don't know if that brings any comfort and peace in the moment, but that is something I have to remind myself of too. That's something I unpack with my therapist. Okay. Cause those are realities for me. I'm looking here from Kyle, and he asks, let's see here, are there any scripture passages that you would recommend for anyone who's struggling? I will I will offer alpha one that I typically offer to others. So First Peter 5, verse 7, Peter writes these words, cast all your cares on him because he cares for you. That's the NIV version. Depending on your translation, it may say anxieties or worries. I like the cares because cast all your cares on him because he cares for you. Just a small teaching on that, just a tidbit while we got a little bit of time. The Greek language was formed around vocational trade skills. A lot of people don't know that, but every word in the Greek language is attached to some sort of job or vocational trade skill action. And so the word cast actually comes from fishing, where you would cast your net out into the water. And the idea and the imagery that Peter, by the way, if you don't know who Peter was, he was a fisherman in the Galilee region during the time of Jesus. The traditional way that a fisherman would cast their net is they would take the whole bulk of the net balled up, and they would take it, and then they would, with all of their might, throw it out into the water. And they would throw it as far or fast as they could to spread it out. And so when he says, cast your cares upon him, what he's saying is he's saying, listen, if you are struggling emotionally, if you're struggling with this internal pain, imagine yourself taking all of that pain, balling it up in your arms, and then throwing it out as hard and as far as you can to a God who loves you more than you could possibly imagine. And the only imagery I can give you beyond that for what that would look like is a few years ago, my son's in third grade, but a few years ago, he was in first grade. And for kindergarten and first grade, there is this gal in his class. And he would often tell us that this gal made his teeth smile. Okay. Okay. So he had it bad for this gal. And they were in kindergarten together. They were in first grade together, and he just thought the world of this young gal, to the point where he told us they were going to get married. Okay. They were planning the wedding. They were going to have a half cake. Half of it was going to be like Batman, and the other half was going to be Pokemon. They had the whole thing planned out. Okay. And then at the end of first grade, he found out that she was not going to be in his class. She was going to be in the other class. And when he found out, he was okay for a hot second. But my wife, she's a first grade teacher at the school, and she teaches in the other classroom. So as he was walking down the hall, he was holding it all together. And she knew that he wasn't going to be in this gal's class. And he saw Mama, and he lost it. He ran to her, and he jumped into her arms like a big floppy mess. That is the imagery that Peter gives us when he says, listen, you ball everything up and you toss it into the arms of Jesus, and he will hold you while you're struggling. That's the best Bible verse I got for you. That's a little mini sermon there, Kyle. I'm just listening there and, looking at some of the comments, and I just want to just encourage you, like, hey, you can try, you can help, you can do the best you can, but the truth is, like, we're not God, and we can't change the outcome of people's lives, and ultimately people are in charge of their own decisions, and that's what makes this so hard. So I don't know if you got any more questions, but I'll keep going if you want. I'm just reading through the comment here, and yeah, Dawn. Yeah, it's not your fault. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Eric. The webinars have been cool for me too, and I'm glad that we can do it. I do think, I mean, as we just think about this word, I think it might be good for us to do maybe in the future something on active listening and empathy, and maybe we can talk about self-harm too. That's a whole different conversation altogether. Believe it or not, there's actually biblical evidence of self-harm, which is an interesting thing. I wrote a whole paper on it years ago, so we can talk about that. But yeah. Any other questions or any thoughts? Yes,
It's nice to see the feedback coming in. These webinars are a great thing. And we also wanted to mention, maybe now is a good time, that Josh is going to be hosting a couples retreat up at Bravehearts Estate on March 13th through 16th and June 12th through 15th. We have two couples retreats coming up. If any of you are interested, please contact the office or info@injuredsoldiers.org. I promise you that you will not regret it. Those of you from Wensco or from, I'm sorry, those of you that have helped Kyle raise money for these to go on is, we don't know how to thank you enough for the division Operation Renewed Hope. You have totally started a whole new side of Operation Injured Soldiers that we are so grateful for. So the Walk for Warriors for this year, there's going to be four of them that Kyle is instrumental in taking part of, and they all are going to be on June 14th. All of you that are listening and all of us that can walk and do this and raise money will make us be able to do more of these with Josh and to do more of the retreats and more, like he says, more, the more webinars we can do and save them to our website, the further we're going to help each other. So please keep all
Yeah.
those in mind.
And if I can just say something about the couples retreats, one, I'm way more fun in person than I am online. It's a true story. And two, here's what a couples intensive or a couples retreat looks like with me. We talk about communication. We talk about conflict management and conflict resolution. Those are two of the most important skills in any relationship. We talk about intimacy. And the different types of intimacy. There is more than just sexual intimacy that matters in a marriage. There's also physical, non-sexual intimacy, emotional, intellectual. There's spiritual intimacy. We talk about how do you find core longings and break down core beliefs that are negative in the marriage. There's a whole lot that we do are negative in the relationship. So there's a whole lot that we do at these couples retreats. And as just as mentioned, I'm really fun and I'm funny. And you get a lot out of it. Plus it's up in Palestine, which is awesome. So love to see you there. One thing before we sign off here, and this is linked a little bit to Dawn. And Dawn, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I am going to say something that I feel really strongly about. And you put a lot of courage out there to say that you should not have believed him. Don, I'm going to give you a word. You can do what you want with it. Here's how I feel about the word should and the word should not. Be kind to yourself and show yourself some compassion. The truth is, you're not responsible. And even if you were, be kind to yourself. It's hard enough. You did. You asked all the right questions. You said all the right things. You did what you could. And the rest isn't up to you. And so just whenever I hear should or should not, in my therapy sessions with clients, I tell them, have some compassion on yourself and be kind to yourself. Past and the pain is hard enough as it is. So my heart to yours. You do with that what you want, but I would feel really remiss if we shut off and you didn't hear that from me. So,
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Yeah. Well, boy, the hour goes fast, I tell you what. But we will hopefully do some more of these in the future. And yeah, super excited for the walk. Love that's happening. And super excited for the couples intensives as well. If that's something you're interested in, get a hold of Pam and Kyle and they'll get you the info. So.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks. Thank you. You guys have a great day. And, I'm going to go home and spend some time with my family. Hopefully they are illness free yet again.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good night.
Thank you.